Welcome to the Repos Non-League Show. Of course, we're here for the next hour and we're joined by two legends of the game. And of course, joining us at this time, of course, he's the one and only Mr. Non-League himself, of course, Mr. Craig Edwards. How are you, Craig?
Yeah, very well, David. You?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. And of course, we've got the legend Mark Bartley from Marlow as well. So welcome, Mark.
Cheers. Not very often been called a legend, but I'll take that. Good to be on with you guys.
Mark, I've got one question for you, sort of, with Craig. I mean, the question, I suppose, for me, and it's been bugging me probably for a couple of years now, and I've been meaning to try and tweet you and then you forget, and then you think you've got a question again, and you're trying to, it goes backwards and forwards. What sort of feeling was it for you and the club when, you know, we got the constitution come out a couple of years ago and you got moved over into the Southern League? I mean, talk us through a little bit about what happened there, because not very often do you get a club that gets successful in getting a switch back to where they came from, and not only switch back to where they came from, it ended up being one of the best decisions the club's ever made, didn't it?
Yeah, because we ended up getting promoted out of there. I mean, it's one of the weird ones because we're always on the cusp, or when we're at step four, we're always on the cusp of sort of bouncing between Isthmian and Southern League, and so we kind of knew that that could happen. But when the league allocations came out, it was clear to us and everyone at the club that if anyone was going to move from our league and should have been moved into that division, it would have been Northwood before us. I think of the 19 away games we were scheduled to have, we would have had to drive past Northwood for 14 of those games. And so it was like, well, it just doesn't make sense. And then you have to go through the usual appeals process. Obviously, like you said, it's very rare that a club will get that turned over. But to be honest, my chairman did a great job of pulling all the relevant information together about the environmental impact it would have had from us doing those additional travelling. And also, I think the key determinant was when we were in the actual appeals process is that the panel that were hearing the appeal were looking, you know, they get a map with all of the sort of the location pins on. And it was just evident to everyone that, you know, how have they moved us and not moved Northwood? Mm. And the representative from the league allocations committee kind of, amongst other things, one of the things that sort of jumped out to me was he was sort of saying, oh, you know, I know that what that A1M is like, and actually that's a nightmare at rush hour. And it was like, well, yeah, you might live close to there, mate, but it's a nightmare for us to try and get around the M25 to get out the other side. So, yeah, in the end, you know, thankfully, you know, the sort of this common sense prevailed, and we'll move back into the Isthmian League. But it was really tricky because also when we looked at some of the information and the comparisons between the two clubs, just didn't look like it had been fully considered for Northwood to move in. And ironically, we got promoted out of the league last year, and Northwood were moved into that division anyway. So, but yeah, that was a bit of a headache because all of a sudden it put, you know, threatened. I started sort of building the squad for the next year, and it started to threaten that squad. And yeah, it was an absolute nightmare for a few weeks. But, you know, like I said, thankfully common sense prevailed and ended up being a great season for us.
And then you got back in the Southern League.
yeah. Yeah, knew we'd be back, but you know, if we're going to go back in this way. I mean, I think this time is probably the right thing, right? Because you do have a few journeys out towards the south and west, but it could be just as difficult for us to get around the M25 to get out to Kent or Essex on a midweek. So it kind of is what it is. And yeah, glad to be at step three and in the Southern League.
What's the furthest journey, Mark?
I think Plymouth Parkway is our furthest one. But I think we're going to do that by train anyway when we go to play them, to be honest. I think it makes sense. Other than that, yeah. And look, it's, you know, it is what it is. I think you step up the next level of football, you have to expect the additional travel. Yeah, we're kind of embracing that. But yeah, Plymouth Parkway is a bit of a journey.
I mean, with that, I mean, how difficult is that? And I mean, Craig will be able to come in with this as well, because of course he's had the situation of being in step two and then back into step three. But I mean, and three to two, how difficult is that to actually sort of then sort of you get promoted and then sort of now you've got to sort of build a squad for step three? But not only step three, they're not going to be sort of like, you know, Dulwich Hamlet and Enfield Town and places like this. You've got, as you said, you've got Hungerford, Gosport Borough, Tiverton, you know, out to Somerset and all those. I mean, I know I'm on my way to Somerset at a weekend, and, you know, it's a good sort of 2.5 hour drive. Do you know what I mean? On a good day. So, I mean, you know, How do you sort of go about that? Because you manage, you've been at the club, as you said before we went on air, 13 years. You've got this little black book, and I would have thought that little black book that you've got is probably more Isthmian based than Southern League based. So how do you sort of then go about sort of trying to convince players to come and join you, knowing that you have got to travel from where you are to Plymouth Parkway?
Yeah, I think at that point it gets to, kind of serious players only. There are people that, lots of players that tell you they have aspirations of playing at a high level. The travel's just part of it. Like I said, we could be in the Isthmian League and we could be going to Kent or Essex midweek and having to do 2, 2.5 hours around the M25. You having to do that on a Saturday can be just as tricky. So, yeah, there definitely are some big journeys in there, but there are also some fairly local ones, Bracknell, Basingstoke, et cetera, et cetera. So, Hanwell. So it's just part and parcel of it for me. And I think that's where you really start to separate the players that are serious about progressing from those that aren't. It definitely isn't easy because financially it's a massive strain as well, because you have to be able to adequately compensate people for their time. And that's just tricky, right? And there's some people that have got, sizable budgets and some that don't. But those are the conditions under which I work. I understand the job, and yes, yeah, so my job is to just try and more offer players a platform. If they come in, they'll put themselves out there. If they do well, then they get the opportunity to kind of go and progress. And that's really it. If you want to progress your football and you want to play at the highest standard, you have to understand the travel is going to increase. So,
Well, I
yeah.
mean, you look at, you said you look at that Central League, and I don't know if Craig's even looked at it, but there is a lot of teams in it, like the Wharton Hersham, as you said, Hamble Town, there's a couple of others I know, Chertsey as well.
Yeah.
That you'd basically almost call them Isthmian sides, and
Yeah.
now all of a sudden you can tell that the success of maybe sides from that sort of area, Isthmian-based sides now, in maybe in step five or whatever else, coming into step four and then into step three. All of a sudden now it is like a real sort of like a pack of cards where they've been shuffled, and all of a sudden there's a heck of a lot of what you'd call as institutional Isthmian sides now into the Southern League.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, Craig will have, a good view on that as well, having managed in that league and got promoted out of the Isthmian Prem. But yeah, for sure. And that's what I mean. So it's not actually, yes, there are some big journeys, but there are also quite a few that aren't that bad. And so I think you just have to understand, you're going to have 6 or 7 of these journeys, 6 or 7 of these Saturdays where, pretty much your whole day is dedicated to football. Going to Merthyr or someone like that. We had Merthyr last week, and
I
the
didn't want to bring that
M20.
up because I didn't think you'd want to speak about
Oh, mate,
that.
I don't know what was worse, losing in the 92nd minute or junction 18 to 19 of the M4 being closed for the day, right? So it meant that, certainly needed to get the Google Maps out and find an alternate route. But yeah, look, you do that, but then you go, it's a great club, right? A great atmosphere. Big challenge for us to go there and really test ourselves. And we follow that up with midweek away at Gosport, and you're traveling down there for a couple of hours. So yeah, look, I enjoy it. It's what I want to do. I want to manage as high as possible. And so yeah, it's just a sacrifice that I'm willing to make.
And just then, just think to yourself, well, it's not too bad now. We've got rid of the trip to Merthyr and all that sort of stuff. And then, of course, you're hoping now that Saturday week it's not pelting down with rain because you've got Plymouth Park way away on that day. But this weekend you end up having to face people like Charlie Austin.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are certainly easier attacks to prepare to face. He's a good friend of my brother's, so he's a really good guy. And but this weekend I'll be hoping that he leaves the shooting boots at home. But yeah, and again, it's great for us. It's a great challenge for us. They've got him. They've also got they've got plenty of options in attack, actually, them as a side, as you're doing their homework on them. But yeah, if you're, when you look at my team, young side, it's a great honour to be testing yourself against someone that's been in the Premier League and scored goals at that level. So, yeah, I look forward to it. Like I said, I'm looking forward to the game. Looking forward to trying to figure a way to stop him scoring. Yeah, we'll do our absolute best.
It's almost like Premier League superstars or sort of like league superstars, you could say, because you've got Charlie Austin coming to visit you, this weekend. And then in 2 weeks' time, you've got Jimmy Glass possibly coming with Wimborne Town as well. So, I mean, it's like the who's who, isn't it?
Yeah, look, some big names there. But at the end of the day, they're coming to Marlow, and when you come to Marlow, we respect you, but we don't fear anyone. And anyone that's kind of been there before, certainly under my tenure, knows if you want to come and pick up 3 points, you're gonna have to come and fight for them. So that's the mindset that we'll have going into both of those games. And like I said, respectful of those guys and their experience and their caliber. But once they cross the white line, they've got to be prepared to roll their sleeves up and match our desire to get the points. And if they don't, then you know, we should be picking some up.
I mean, what was it like that game against Murphy? And as you brought it up, I didn't. I mean, go to that ground in the first place. The ground, and I don't know if Craig's ever been to Murphy Town, but it's a fantastic sort of how can I put it into context? I suppose one side of the ground, Craig, is sort of oldie worldy.
Yeah.
And the other side of ground is almost like brand new, isn't it? And it's like it's an amazing stadium, you know, 3G as well. It's an absolutely iconic stadium, and I've been there a couple of times, especially when they named one of the stands after the late chairman Anthony Hughes a few seasons ago. You know, and it's a beautiful ground and such a fantastic atmosphere in there. I mean, how did you prepare for that game?
Yeah, look, same as every week, you know. Do your homework on them as a side. What you know is actually they're probably one of the two or three grounds that we'll go to where you feel that the officials could be influenced by the crowd, because the crowd is sizable, it's vocal. And so you have that in the back of your mind. So you don't want to give an official too many big decisions to make. However, I must say on the day that the officials that we had at Merthyr were fantastic. I thought the ref was good, made some really good decisions. I think you couldn't have asked for anything better. So that really worked in our favour. But you know, we prepare as we prepare every week for this side, you know, do our homework on them, but we focus on what we can do to try and, you know, give ourselves a chance to win the game. And that's what we did on the day. And, you know, we're unfortunate to not come away with something in the end. And, you know, but it did give us a little bit of confidence and underline the work that we've been trying to do over previous weeks was starting to take hold. And then obviously we bounced into the Gosport game in fairly good and confident spirit, and then we went and repeated that level of performance, and that was what I said at the end of the game. I said to the boys, look, if you perform like this every week, you're going to pick up more points than you're going to lose, because that's just the reality of football. And then, you know, the biggest challenge for us was, could we go 3 days later or 4 days later and produce that level of performance again? And we did, and we won. And so yeah, Merthyr was a fantastic experience. You know, like I said, a bit soured by the way that we lost the game, but if anything, it should have given us, or given those that were maybe sort of on the fence, that little bit of extra confidence that we can compete at the level.
That pesky Ricardo Reece, eh?
Yeah, it's, you know what? It's one of them. Fair play to them. I think there was a foul in the build-up to the goal, but, you know, ultimately, they've done what they needed to do and got it across the line. And I think many teams will go there and fall to this season. So we look forward to welcoming them back to our place later on in the year.
904 there, Craig, as well.
Wow.
So, a great thing. But, I mean, talk to us a little bit about going in before we speak to Craig and Ab. Tell us a little bit about Marlow as a club, because not many people will know much about Marlow. I mean, tell us a little bit about the club in general. What was, you know, what was the aim this season going into Step 3, you know, this time? And a little bit more around, you know, what the consistency of the club is.
Yeah, so, look, Marlow is very much like it's like a family club. You come there, real close-knit sort of like relationships between the supporters and the players and, you know, the committee and everyone else. It's just, it really is that. Obviously, the last few years, we've been knocking on the door at Step 4 for sort of like trying to get ourselves promoted. You know, once Craig even ended our dreams over at Chesham in the playoffs, you know, and you know, I don't know if I've still forgiven him for that, but, you know, he did that over there. So, yeah. So no, it was good, you know. So yeah, we've been doing that. We've been knocking on the door for a while, and you know, we felt as though what we do is, like I said, give players a platform, try and make sure we can challenge at the top end and try and get ourselves out. And then thankfully we did that. Coming into this season, we just said, look, we'll give it our all. I think we're realistic about where our financial sort of position is amongst some of the other clubs, and again, that's not an excuse, it's not a complaint, it's just a realization. Like I said, I'm a manager, I'm happy to work under the conditions that I'm working, you know, and I'm aware of it. And so what we said beginning of this season was we'd try and, you know, cliche, but we'll try and win as many games as possible. We knew there'd be an adjustment period, which there has been, But I think anybody that's been watching us closely would have seen over the last few weeks that that progression has started to really take hold, and we're continuing to improve as a team. And also, we're improving in terms of some of the players that we're bringing in. So, as a club, we just want to continue to progress. We definitely want to try and stay in this division for next year, and then build again. We know it'll be tough. We know there'll be some really tough periods through the season. So, yeah, we're here. We're happy to be here. We enjoy being here. We want to stay here. And so, like I said, it's what we have to do is make sure everybody that plays us knows that they're going to get a thorough examination. And hopefully we, like I said, we pick up enough points to stay in the division.
Right, I heard it on TalkSport today. They were talking around teams like Ipswich and teams like this, that they were saying, like, in the Premier League, that they, what they really want to do is, is finish just outside the play, outside the relegation places, and then they can start building and for the following year, and it'll be easier the following year than what it is maybe this year. And they said that, they were quoting places, people like the likes of Brentford that have done it and sort of stayed up for years. I mean, he's do you feel that would be the case for Marlow as well, if you can? If you can start this year, that next year might be a little bit easier because you know what to expect as such, and maybe people see you then as a step three side rather than a step four side that's been promoted.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we're, it's about establishing yourself at the level. So, the more years you spend in the league, the better that I know the opposition, teams and managers. You understand a bit more about how the managers set their teams up. You can be a bit better prepared because, the teams will change, personnel will change, but quite often there are some common themes about how a manager sets their side up and how they do things. And so you roughly know what to expect. Also, we will know that, whatever we finish the season with, that we've got a group of players that are able to compete at the level, as opposed to kind of going in with that unknown. So absolutely, you would feel that the second year would be, you'd be in a better position to start than the first. So that would be, how I kind of see it as well. And I think there is that gradual trying to build, which is what we did when I came into the club, right? I came into the club, we're in step five, got promoted to step four, had a number of sort of playoff campaigns, but we, once you understand the level, you kind of know what that's going to look like, what the team's going to look like, and then you get to, where we are now in step three. And so that's exactly what we'll try and do here. Just try and make sure that we're, we're competitive, that we've got players that are good enough for the level. Might means you have to chop and change a little bit at the beginning, which is what we've done. Had to, personnel's turned over a little bit. But yeah, I'm confident we can, I'm confident we're good enough to stay up. I'm confident we'll do it. And then, I think next year we'll start in a much better position.
Now, what sort of other teams have you got in the club, Mark? I mean, is it just
but
first
yeah
or
we've got
recent
no we've got us
ladies?
we've got under 23s, we've got a development side. So as a club, actually, we've been building that over the last few years. So maybe we had the we had under 18s for a while, and then we went probably 3 or 4 years where we didn't have anything backing up the first team. And then what we've got now is we've got a thriving youth section. Then you get up to the under 18s who play in the allied counties, and then we've got a development side, under 23s or stroke reserve side, and then us as a first team. So now that infrastructure's kind of been put in place. There's a pathway for players to come through from, from the youth sections right the way through to the first team. So on a Thursday, we all train at the same place. You can us and the reserves and the development side train at the same place. It gives me a good visibility over the players that are doing well there and who's coming through. And so, yeah, we feel as though we're building that infrastructure behind the club because, yeah, there is an element about resources and financial resources. That's one side of it. But if we can grow our own, so to speak, and develop our own players, then that definitely helps. And so having a manager that manages the reserve side, who's someone that's been in my first team environment for a number of years, he understands what I'm looking for, how I work, and it makes the whole thing a little bit more seamless. So, yeah, look, as a club, I couldn't ask for more in terms of everybody's pulling in the same direction. We're all, realistic about where we are. We all want the best for the club. Clearly, if you're, if you go and win the lottery this week and you wanted to come and invest in the club, I'd welcome it. But, other than that, other than having the magic wand to kind of just go and get a load more cash, you couldn't really ask for it to be be at a better place. And I think that's clear. I wouldn't, I don't think you turn up and accidentally stay at a club for 13 years or 12 years or whatever it is if you don't enjoy it and don't enjoy the people that are around it. And and that's where I am. And that's, like I said, I'm enjoying it.
Do you get, are you one of the type of managers that if you've got like a under 23s, under 18s, et cetera, that they play the same system as you? Or are you so that, if you get an injury somewhere on the line, the left back, the right back, the centre half knows exactly what's expected and just walks straight in and as if he's playing for the under 23s or under 18s, or are you somebody that just lets them do what they want?
Yeah, I'm more about the, I guess the common, there's got to be some common elements or ethics that run through the side more so than the formation. So I'd rather that everybody knew that I'm big on the fact that when you lose the ball, when we're out of possession, I want you to get the right side of the ball and then go and engage people. That's more important to me than somebody playing the same system as us, you know, going out and saying, oh, right, you're going to play 4-4-2 just like the first team and you're going to do, at the end of the day, it's those kind of key characteristics that I look for in a player. The graft, the unselfishness, the, you know, willingness to stand up and be strong in 1v1 duels, you know, those are the things that I'm looking for. And that's what I need to see as a consistent sort of trait throughout the teams, as opposed to, you know, me sort of dictating everybody plays the same system and all that sort of stuff. It's just, you know, for me, it's that's less important. It's a nice to have, but it's less important than having the right characteristics of an individual.
Absolutely. Well, of course, our other guest tonight, it's very unusual that he's been this quiet for this long, isn't it? That'd be nice.
Not like that on the touchline, mate, I tell you.
No chance. I've never ever entrapped Mark.
And you apart from when I was trying to get promoted.
you know, like just listening to him, how impressive he is and why they're doing so well over the years, you know. And yeah, the story I was going to tell was when we was in step four, and we were going along really nicely in the playoffs and that. And we went over to Marlow and they got a lucky 4-0 win against us. they absolutely smashed us. And I knew how difficult it was going over there. We went there on a Tuesday night and they turned us over. And obviously we've had words in the dressing room. And that in a way, I think, got us promoted because that really was a turning point for us, that we realised that we weren't strong enough in certain areas, the character of certain people weren't what we were looking for, and it gave them a target, really, that we had to finish above Marlow because we didn't want to go there in the playoffs. And we managed to do that, and, I mean, the semi-final where when we beat them 2-1 was tough enough. It would have been even tougher over there. And we was 1-0 down half-time and managed to get home 2-1. And I thought that was the biggest, with all due respect to Bracknell, and Bracknell hadn't been beaten for 2 years at home. We went over there and we won it very, very comfortably, the final. But that was the one for me that we had to win, was the semi. You know, I thought if we win a semi, I felt very, very confident we'd win the final. But he was, you know, and you know, whenever you went to Marlow or they came to you, it was going to be a real battle and a real tough game. And, so that was the turn. I think there's always a key game in any promotion season where you think that was a massive game for us. And invariably, it's when you take a bad defeat. Like the following year when we got promoted, we went to Sudbury in the FA Cup and got done 1-0, and we were poor. And that was a real turning point for us in that season. So, yeah, so, I mean, I've got Mark to thank for getting thankful.
Well, Craig, I mean, I don't know about Mark, and I would just speak from myself, you know, knowing he was a friend for quite some time now. And I was at work, and all of a sudden, something pinged on my phone back on the 13th of October this year, and I was absolutely flabbergasted to see that you'd left Chesham. I mean, was it something that you was thinking about?
Yeah, it was. You know, and, I mean, I'm full of admiration for Mark. You know, I mean, I think everyone knows how much I loved it at Chesham. You know, it was a great club. It was a great club, great people over there. And when I think of what it was like when I first walked in there to what we left, it's just a different place, you know. And that's not just what we've done on the pitch, but what they've done off the pitch. I mean, that first full season where Hazy and Yedding went up, the season that, you know, we played Marlow, we played Hazy and Yedding at home, and it was a top of the table clash, and it finished 3-3. And it was unbelievable. And ironically, about a few weeks ago, I was looking through the YouTube videos And this came on, and I watched the highlights of that 3-3, and I thought, God, what a game. It was 3-1 up with 10 minutes ago, and they equalised. But I looked behind that goal, there was 12 people, and we're getting sort of over 500 regular there this season, you know, and that's where the clubs come from, you know. And but yeah, as I said, Mark's been at Marlow 12-13 years. I don't think I could do that. It's the longest I've ever been at a club, you know, in this almost seven years. And I just felt I got stale with it. And everyone over there, it was like the chairman weren't my chairman, the owner weren't my owner, they was my friends. And the people on the committee and the supporters and everyone at the club was my friends. And I mean, I've always taken defeats really badly, you know, but I think this year it was really draining me, because I just felt you're letting your friends down more. It's more personal. And I thought, you know, I need a change. I thought, I need a change where I'm going fresh and, just something new, you know. And it was, I thought I needed a change. I thought they needed a change. I went away. I was in Albania a week before I decided. We went on a Sunday morning, came back on a Friday night, and we're playing Potter's Bar. And I thought, one, I needed a break, and two, I really needed to think about things. And I actually wrote a resignation letter to the chairman. I wrote it on the Friday, but I thought, I'm going to see how it goes Saturday. And Saturday, I thought we played really well first half. Second half, they were better than us, and they won 1-0. And I just thought, that's it. I'm done over here. And I I told all the boys in the dressing room, then I went into the car park and phoned up, sent the email to Lee and Dean. And I phoned them up in the car park. I said, can you come out? You know, I didn't want to go in the bar and everyone's having a chat. And then I called them out and told them, and you know, they were really emotional. I was, you know, and it was really, really tough, you know. And but it is what it is, and I just thought it was the right thing to do. I looked at the fixtures that they had coming out, and I thought it would be a good time to go, because and I left it in good hands, you know, with Preston and James. I thought, you know, they would do a good job. They knew how I worked. They, you know, I thought they were great lads. It would be an easy continuation. And basically, I looked at the games they had, and I thought, because I had messages, hundreds of messages, but from the players saying, like, I'll give it a week, you know, we turn it around, because with all due respect to Hastings and Whitehall, they were having a bad time themselves, and they were winnable games. And I thought, no, it gives them give them an opportunity to get off to a reasonable start. As it turned out, they got a great start. And then, they got Cray Saturday, you know, who were bottom. Then they got Canview, not doing too well this year, and then Bowers. So it was a nice little period, really, for the two boys to sort of establish themselves. And he actually phoned me after the Hastings games. The chairman phoned me the next day. He said, we ain't had luck like that in 5 years. I said, oh, cheers. Because the Hastings... They was 1-0 up early on Hastings, and they had their keeper sent off in the 19th minute. And I thought, it's never happened to me. You know, but it was where we were. But I had no regrets. I mean, I was actually watching the FWP video printer, like on the I was watching the game on the telly. And like, I thought, oh, bloody hell. Because when they pulled it back to 3-2 Hastings, the last 10 minutes or so, it was like I was back on the touchline again. And when the final whistle went, you know, I was over the moon. More so, as much for anyone but the club, but more so for Preston and James. Because I knew it was a good opportunity for him. I knew it's what they both want to get into. And I'm sure they'll do well with it, you know. And, so I was delighted for them. And then I thought that's all we needed. We just needed that win to turn the corner. And then they've gone to Whiteleaf and, Whitehawk, and by all accounts won it pretty comfortably, you know. So, and then they've won the Velocity Cup, And I thought, bloody hell, Preston, like he's really taken over, because he's not only did he win the game, he saved the penalty and scored the winning penalty in the, because it was Bloody Cup. I thought, I've never done that. And like, but yes, you know, so I was really pleased for the boys, pleased for the club. And hopefully they can, you know, they can turn things around and have a run. But I just felt it was time for me, you know. That, I mean, usually I used to do 2-3 year stints at clubs, and then I'd think, well, that'd do me. I've done my job. But I'd like to think, you know, every other, I think it's 10 clubs now, and every single one of them have been in a far, far better position when I've left than when I went there. You know, because invariably you get a job, they're struggling, they're at the, you know, in relegation trouble. And so, yeah, I can sort of walk away with a lot of friends over there. There's been no bad feeling at all from anyone over there. They've been amazing. And I'd like to think that, you know, I'd always be welcome over there, and I've got a lot of good friends over there, and I wish them well, and I hope it goes well for them.
Have you spoke to Mel? Who's gone in?
I don't really know. I don't really know him that well. We played one game against him when they were at Hampton, when we was in a conference south. And but I don't know him that well. All I know and what I've heard is that it's chalk and cheese. That we're chalk and cheese. Like, we're totally 100% different characters. But you know, he's the chairman made a fantastic appointment the last time. So hopefully this one has worked out just as well for him.
So was you surprised though that Preston and that didn't get the job though, considering that they'd done so well?
And on art, I was. I thought they would get it. But you know, they I think they wanted someone, you know, what they said with experience. But I think I was surprised the boys didn't get it.
So there's been all the rumours going around, and you know, we spoke before we went on air, but I mean, all the rumours going around as well, around that this is retirement for Mr. Edwards. Surely not. It can't be, no, can it?
Far too young. No way. No. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I've actually enjoyed this break. And, you know, as Mark could tell you, you know, you think, well, you have a break in the summer. It's when you're working at your hardest, probably. And even when we went over to Albania for 4 weeks, and we got this thing because, you know, she does her shopping and all that we haven't in the flat, we haven't got the Wi-Fi, which at first of all, I got to get Wi-Fi, and then I thought, but when we were without it, it was brilliant. So the hotel next door, we go there, you know, have some lunch, and we have this thing where we can have an hour's work we do. I was 4 hours. I was there more or less every day. I had my own little table, drinks coming over every now and then. But that was it. I was on the phone. I was doing, and yeah, and it was. I was busier than ever, you know. It was just. It's been nice this last couple of weeks having a break. I mean, Saturday, I'll be honest, I just sat, watched the game. And had the video printer on, and it was nice just watching the results rolling around. But no, to be honest, I'm getting a bit of itchy feet, and so we'll see if anything comes along.
Don't fancy going travelling out to Hastings then?
No.
I mean, is it a case though as well, Craig? I mean, for yourself, is it a case of sort of like feeling as well there's still that challenge at step two as well, you know, with Chessing going you know, and it's sort of, you know, unfortunately a tough season, but, you know, on a heck of a lot smaller budget than everybody else. Do you still see that as a massive challenge to try and get in there and show them, you know, who Craig Edwards is at step two?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that was my biggest disappointment. And like Mark was alluding to about staying in the division this year, I honestly felt like with all the success we had at Chessing, I thought the biggest thing I did was taking us to the last week in step two before we got relegated. And it's my biggest disappointment that we just failed to stay up. Because like Mark was saying, I think it would have been massive for us, and I think we would have been fine if we'd have stayed up. Because I mean, we lost 10 of our first 11. And then we changed the side rank completely. We realised, because the side the year before, best set of lads I've met, you know, and I honestly felt wherever we went, we'd win. You know, we won the Art Senior Cup, got promoted, went to fifth round of a trophy, and we went to Stockport, who were running away with the National League. And I honestly, Dave, expected to beat them. And we came very, very close, to be honest. And lost 1-0. But that's how it was with the side. And we changed it round. We beat Ebbsfleet. We beat a lot of good sides in the running. But we just fell short. And it was those first 11 games that killed us. But it was that final week we got. I think we got relegated to Tuesday, the last Tuesday before the final Saturday. And that was really, really disappointing because I honestly believed that if we could have hung in there, and I thought it was winnable games, you know, and we didn't quite get the points we needed. But if we could have hung in there, I think it would have really sort of we could have stabilised in that division, and I think it would have given the club the lift to and if you like, we would have been a step two side. I think we could have, but it weren't to be. And it's you know, last season was disappointing. And so but we always, I mean, to be fair, every season I was there, we virtually had a different side the following season for different reasons. And invariably, we'd get off to a bad start, like that National League, start of the season, where we lost 10-11. The season, when I left after the Potters bar game, we were 3 points worse off than we were when we got promoted last time. You know, we traditionally started off slow and finished, like, from Christmas on, we was like a steam train. You know, and I think that a lot of that was, it was, you know, getting the sides that we wanted, you know, because invariably your pre-season will have a player or two that you think's a world beater, and it goes into the season and then they're not what you expected them to be. So, you know, there's a bit of chopping changing, but, you know, we'd be established by sort of October, November, and then we'd push on from there. And that's what tended to happen. But we lost virtually the whole side after the National League campaign, because those players all wanted to stay in step two, and you can't blame them for that. So we had to start again, and it was really difficult for us coming on that, on the back of that relegation, and then virtually totally new side. And it was very, very difficult last year. But yeah, that you know, is what it is. And no regrets, and enjoyed. I won't say every moment at Chesham, but the vast majority of them.
So, Craig, I mean, but for a manager that's going through possibly the same sort of start to a season as you did in the National South, I mean, what sort of advice would you give somebody like Gavin McPherson at Enfield? Because, you know, they've played the first 15 games, they've lost 12 out of 15, sitting 22nd out of 24. I mean, what is there an advice that an experienced manager like yourself would say to him? You know, I wish I would have done this when I was in that situation.
Well, I think, you know, where we was in us, I did what I had to do, and that was basically change the whole side, the whole squad. Now, I wouldn't tell Gavin to do that because he knows his squad far better than me. But I think you reach a point, and we did, like after 10, 11 games, we were sat in the office and I said, listen, we know we're near good enough. You know, we're going to get relegated with how we are. No doubt about it. We have to change it all round. And we changed it. And we changed our shape a little. We changed the way we played. And we got the personnel in to fit into that. We became a lot more difficult to beat. And then when you win, it's amazing. You win a couple of games. Players that thought you had little doubts about it, all of a sudden really started to shine. It's just confidence. You know, that confidence of being able to go out and win games. And that's the hardest thing as a manager, to try and instill that confidence and keep that belief when you have lost a run of games. It's that's your big test. But ultimately it comes down to the players And it's amazing what a wing can do, as it showed last week with Preston and James getting the win against Hastings. You know, all of a sudden, you can't wait for the next game. It's all, you go into it fully confident. And like I say, you get to the stage where we were the year prior to that, where I honestly, by November, I honestly felt we'd beat any team we played. And we were about 14th in February that year. And remember I did an interview after the game when we played Leverett, Mickey Sullivan. He did an interview, and I watched a few of his interviews, and he'd always say to the managers, who's your teams, who's going to win it, and who's your teams for the playoffs? And I said Worthing, and then I think I went Stortford, Hornchurch, Enfield, and I said in us, and he laughed. I said, I'm telling you, because we had a few games in, and I said, I'm telling you, we was 14th, I think I'm about 16 points behind. I said, and when we get to the playoffs, we'll win them. And we went to Stortford and won in the semi-final. We went to Hornchurch and won in the final. But we just got on a roll, and it was just everything had clicked into place. The way how we play, everyone knew their roles. Everyone was confident. Everyone was confident, not just in themselves, but in their teammates. We were very predictable to each other. Everyone knew not only their jobs, but everyone's jobs. So we went into games, and expected to win. Like I say, even when we went to Stockport, and that we got an unbelievable reception from the Stockport supporters as well, and from the manager and their team. And, you know, we could have easily got a result out of that, you know. And, that's I mean, I wouldn't advise Gavin everything. You know, he's very experienced, good manager. But that's what worked for me. We just had to have a clear out because we weren't good enough. But I owed it to the boys from the year before, I felt, to give them that opportunity to play step two. But it's a massive jump from step three, and I'm sure Gavin's aware of that. If he weren't before, he definitely is now. The jump between three and two is massive.
Of course, it doesn't help as well, does it, for poor Gavin when he comes in like that, and Gillingham come along and nick his star striker, and he's and your old club captain, of course, and then the Enfield club captain decides to retire. I mean, it's a bit of a thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, that's the trouble, like, and I'm sure Mark's had the same problems, that if you do well and you are one of the smaller clubs and you do well, you get the big clubs that come and think, well, cool, he must have like three or four, or they must have three or four good players, and they come along and they can just cherry pick them, you know. And there's little you can with some of the clubs and the money they're throwing about, and if they've got a chance to play up a level, you've got no chance of competing with that, you know. So it does make it very, very difficult and very challenging. Mm. Yeah, it'd be lovely to go to have a squad that you're thinking. And I'm sure Mark's getting his squad together and they're improving week by week. And you think if you get that opportunity next season to have that established side and you add one or two additions and keep that continuity, unfortunately, I was never able to do that. So it made it doubly difficult. You know, if you could keep your players, then that's the key to it for me.
Mm. Agreed. I mean, one question I'd like to ask both of you for you times. I mean, you've both been in the game a long time. And I suppose the question I'd like to ask you guys is, Mark, and there is a reason behind this, and I'll explain it in a minute. But I mean, Mark, I mean, with all the games that you've ever played, either played or managed, what would you have said was the game that you played in or managed in that was probably the most toxic game you played in for one reason or another?
When we lost 4-0 to Marlow. well, funny enough, it wasn't at any sort of real level, but, like, you know, I'm from Bethnal Green in that, and we had a Thursday afternoon team. This is when I was sort of first got into management, and I was sort of player manager, but on a Thursday afternoon, we'd play in the Thursday afternoon league. And invariably in the semi-final or final, we'd play East Street from over Bermondsey Way. And I'm telling you now, it was like really and truly, it tested every bit of courage you had, because it was, you looked along the line and they had supporters there with Rottweilers, they had great big 4x4s, it was, and the game itself, I mean, the tackles that were going in, you wouldn't imagine even one tackle like that. And they were just massive, massive battles. And we, you know, we played them at home, we was always great, but we always managed to get the better of them, you know. And but they were really, really, really toxic. But not, you know, that was sort of in the London, I don't know what cup they used to call that, the London Sanso Cup. But it was, they were really toxic games. I suppose at this level, the games with Enfield were always pretty toxic, you know, between the supporters and that, you know, there's no love lost between them at all. And they hated me. So, so I would say, yeah, that the when I was at Chesham, definitely the games with Enfield. But on the flip side, they were the games you really look forward to anyway, because the atmosphere was fantastic. And if you managed to turn them over, it was even better.
Mark, yeah. What about yours?
Yeah, definitely. I think the most toxic, probably toxic, most toxic game I've managed in was we had a county cup. I think it was quarterfinal, semi-final against Slough Town a few years ago, and there was nothing leading up to the game that made you know that this game was going to go down that route. But for whatever reason, I mean, we were division or two below them at the time, and we it was a smash and grab. We beat them 1-0, smash and grab. The goal was offside. Our striker's offside on the goal as well. It's just all of those ingredients to probably get their technical area raging. And yeah, just between like maybe in the last sort of 10 or so minutes of the game, and I think their dugout were usually quite calm guys, but for whatever reason, it just went ballistic. And I remember at the end of the game, there was a lot going on between the two sets of players and also the management team. And I think that probably felt like the most toxic, like in terms of a flashpoint. I think that probably the most toxic in the build up when I kind of knew that was going to happen was a few years back when we played Aylesbury United in the cup, FA Cup. It was a replay, and in between the draw at their place and the replay at ours, there were unsavory comments from a couple of their guys on their message board, and it went around my changing room like wildfire. And I remember going into, and look, I've managed a few teams that have of individuals that are quite, like I said, I like people on the front foot. I like, you know, aggressive, robust individuals playing for me. But I remember walking into the change room before that replay, and I thought, oh dear, like, you know, I don't need to say too much here. I don't really need to do a team talk. These guys, all 16 of them, they were ready for war. There was no doubt we were going to win that game. It was just a matter. And I remember at the end of the game, an indication was, I think two of the players that got sent off for me were on the bench. We're like subs. That was a crazy game. But I think that was probably the most toxic in the build-up. And then just realising as a manager at that point, I had no way I was going to stop what was going to happen that day. So,
Well, I'm quite surprised that one that Craig hasn't brought up, actually, because it happened quite recently. But I'll go to one of them first. One of the first ones I've ever witnessed was a few seasons, well, quite a few seasons ago. I think it was about 2016, 2015, somewhere around that sort of area. When I was at Harlow Town, and there was a scenario coming into the season, I think the season before, where a player was about to play for Harlow, and I was basically learning the ropes of match day secretary at the time, and with Ray Dyer, and this guy, I can't even think what the gentleman's name was, but he played for Tilbury that season. He'd also played for Thurrock that season, but he was signed-eyed. So he couldn't play, and Ray stopped it just at the right time before before the game actually physically starts. And he can't play him. The be and end all of it was that Tilbury lost a certain amount of points because they played him in certain games. So did Thurrock, but Thurrock got relegated due to it. So, of course, skip forward a season, and Harlow were very close to Needham Market in going up. And I think both teams scored over 100 points in the East Mid North. Both scored over 100 goals, and Harlow missed out by, I think, 1 point. And then in the playoff semi-final, who did they get? Thurrock. And it was probably the most hostile crowd up to that point that I'd ever seen. And Harlow were 26 points in front of Thurrock in the league basis, and we lost after extra time 4-3 and got and lost. That was probably the most toxic game I've been to until, and this is the one that I can't believe Craig didn't talk about, the 26th of December of last year. Because something happened on that day. The game was Chesson against Enfield Town, a bit like you said, rivals. But 2 days or 3 days before that, and this is why I wasn't ignoring you guys, I was actually scrolling through to try and find a gentleman's name. A certain Chesson captain by the name of Taylor McKenzie decided to swap over and ended up at Enfield, and his first game was away at Chesson. I've never seen anything quite like it. There was plastic snakes being thrown on the pitch. It was unbelievable. He was being helped off the pitch beforehand, off the pitch beforehand. It was a really hostile. No one was going for him, but I think it was just in case. But it was, but it was just a case of there's all these plastic snakes being thrown on the pitch, and I think Craig had done an interview during the weekend as well. And it was the atmosphere was like you could feel it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, Craig, can you remember the game?
Yeah, still, I still got a lot of bitterness about it. I can't believe, and the most disloyal thing that's ever happened in 20 odd years of managing. He had great years with us, that boy, and to go to them a week before we was playing them as our captain, and our supporters had been good to him, and basically, he came over to us from Enfield 4 or 5 years prior and didn't have a good word to say about the club, and it was all. And I honestly, yeah, it was. And that was, I mean, what I've told you before is where the game, it was really toxic and it kicked off and it was all spur of the moment.
Yeah.
This was really nasty. This was really nasty. And I'll tell you, as long as I live, I won't forgive the boy for it, and he was my captain, and I had loads of time for him. But that's that. Yeah, I was disgusted with it.
I still don't know where they got all these plastic snakes from, Mark. Honestly, there was hundreds and hundreds of things.
Look, I'll tell you what, and I understand what Craig's saying. As a manager, there's a special relationship between you and your skipper. There's a, and that doesn't mean that they always get, I've got my captain for a number of years playing for me. It doesn't always mean that, the decisions fall his way. And, there'll be times when you have to communicate a tough message, you might take them out. But there is a special relationship between you and your skipper because, there is that trust. It is, especially over a number of years, it becomes much more of a friendship, of a kind of, you a collaboration in terms of how you lead the team forward. And yeah, that'll be a really tough one to take. Like, I can pretty much take anything, but I think that's the one that really. That really would would yeah, I'd probably be importing the pro I'd be importing them pa plastic snakes from Amazon or something, but yeah, I'm with Craig on that. That's a tough one. Go to the rivals a week before.
I would have accepted it to a degree if he had gone to, like I say, he knows our supporters and how good they were to him. He knows what they thought of Enfield, and it was just a rival. If he'd have said, look, they've made me a really good offer, I'm gonna go, but not played in that game. Let's not play later. But to go and then he's rubbing and up. They beat us 2-1, and he's going up there, he's celebrating with his supporters and all that, and really rubbing their nose in it. And I thought it was just unbelievable, honestly. And no, so yeah.
Talking of that game as well, the referee was awful that day, weren't he?
Yeah. I've never seen a referee. He's I don't know if you've
Seriously bad.
Where's he from? Spain? When he's
I
Spanish.
think so. Yeah, we had it. That was the second time that I'd been able to interview. I'd seen him once before, but he was. It was. Honestly, the exaggeration of every single arm movement, Mark, it was
Yeah.
unbelievable. Honestly,
He couldn't
pointed
speak
here,
English.
pointed. Ah.
he booked one of our boys for Descent, and I said to him, okay, fair. I said, what did he say? And he couldn't speak English. He's had to ask his linesman, and he didn't know either. So I said, so I don't know where he's got
the yellow card from. Yeah.
He was bad that. I don't know if he's still doing it in there, is he? But the worst rep I've ever seen at that level.
I mean,
type of game as well.
Yeah, and no disrespect to Craig. I mean, Craig might have a different view of it, and he probably will have a different view of it. But they got on that stage. I was sitting there with my dad in the crowd, and Chesson got a penalty. And for me, it was never a penalty in a million years. Do you know what I mean? It was
the only thing I got right that day.
It was unbelievable.
It weren't a pen.
It was incredible. He gave
them an absolutely ridiculous free kick, what they score from the first goal, and booked our player. And he's won the ball as clean as you like. He was just horrendous. And to have him in that type of game, I thought wasn't the best. But there you go. I love all referees.
I was going to say, don't get me started there. I mean,
just to prove a point. I mean, that sort of atmosphere happens. It, you know, it's sort of all age groups. I mean, I used to be a referee, and I refereed a game once down at Thaden Boys, and I went over there. It was Thaden Boys versus Epping. You know, I think it was an under 11s game, and you know, they're playing. It's a nice game of football. The rest of it, but. All of a sudden, the Thaden Boys people, and it was quite a lot of people there. There must have been a good, I reckon, there must be a good 100, you know, parents there and grandparents there down one side of the pitch. And all of a sudden, they were just sort of, it was causing grief. They were screaming, shouting abuse at all these Epping players. And then it was starting to affect little kids on the pitch. And I had to stop the game once and speak to both of the captains and say, look, need to calm down. Otherwise, I don't want to abandon this game, but it's getting to that stage where it's getting silly, you know, the safety for the kids. Then it carried on a little bit further. And then the manager from Thaden Boys was kicking off. Some of the parents were kicking off. And I had to call the managers in and speak to them. And then all of a sudden, I said the same thing to them. And about 2 minutes later, one of these little lads, now you can imagine, 10 years of age, they're probably about 4'0". Do you know what I mean? About 3 stone soaking wet. And he's standing on the touchline just about to take a throw in. And one of the granddads, believe it or not, grandparents, I think it was the grandmother of one of the Thaden Boys, walks straight behind the back of this kid and just shoves him and pushes him about 5 yards onto the pitch. So I calls the game off and abandons the game because it was getting, you know, quite toxic at the time. So I calls it off. And as I'm walking off to my car, the Thaden Boys manager walks up to his kids and starts telling them to chuck stuff at me. And they're picking up cans, bottles and stuff like this and lobbing them at me into the car park. And I'm going towards my car. And as I'm going towards my car, this bloke's walking the dog. And I'm thinking, and he's coming towards me. And I'm thinking, oh, no, I'm going to get a right-hander here. Do you know when you just get that feeling it's going to happen? You know? And he's walked up to me and he's gone, you're backing away because you're right by your car and by a fence. So he's not got much place to go, you know. And he goes, no, don't panic, mate. He said, I'm not having a go at you. He says, I said, what's up? He said, I can't believe, he said, you let that game go on for as long as you did with the amount of abuse and stuff that was going on in that game. He said, I credit you for, you know, for what you actually did, you know, in that game, calling it off for the safety of those poor young kids. Because these kids just wanted to play football, but it was just everybody else. And it went to the, and I was on the league committee. He went to the league committee and they threw it out. And he went, oh, it's nothing. There's no. It's like, what? He's like, box flying over the top and everything else. But I don't know.
Now, I respect it. Look, it's a tough gig, referee. I mean, kids' football is a total other world. But yeah, it's a tough gig. And I do respect it. It's just you do get some absolute stinkers, though, in our league at our level. So yeah, tough job. But there's some good ones. There are definitely some good ones. And one.
Right. Well, you're talking to good ones. There was a young girl referee called Abby Byrne. I don't know if you ever had a show. She just got married. So her married name's now Abby Byrne. I don't know if you've seen. She's just been this week, which she's always been a close friend of the show, and one of the best referees I've seen.
I remember.
And she's just been appointed referee for the women's under 18s World Cup quarterfinal.
Oh, wow.
So, which is, you know. I know it's only under 18s, but it's a World Cup quarterfinal.
That's good to go on.
You know what I mean? She's just doing this thing. Incredible.
She was good. Oh,
congratulations to her. Yeah. Like I said, there are some good ones, but when you get the bad ones, damn, they're bad.
So,
and it's Do you know, a lot of the time, I just think, just be honest. You know, if you make mistakes, and they do, it's just when and I thought, no, yeah, that's not what's happening. You've seen us, and in that 20-minute thing, you know, it's a good idea because you call Dan, but you go in there and it's just like they've rehearsed their script and. I mean, what, you know, why have I wasted my time coming in here? Mm. But because I did a seminar when I was at Billericay for all the referees in Essex, and I had to do, you know, from a manager's perspective and everything else. And had questions, and referee, he said, what do you think is the chief the main quality that makes a good referee? And I said, honestly and truly, I said, like, you probably all know the rules, the laws of the game, etc. But it's, I think a referee always gives himself a better chance when he looks like he's enjoying the game. He's got a smile on his face and he's enjoying it. And, you know, you tend to, sorry, you're going to make a mistake. You know, they're all going to make mistakes. I'm going to make mistakes. The player's going to make mistakes. But I think when you see someone who's enjoying it, it makes it easier. When there's so many referees, I look at it and I think, and I don't know why you do this, because you're not enjoying it at all. And they just got that I don't know, just just waiting for something to happen to jump in, and it just don't look like they enjoy it to me, you know. So that was my thing, and that's how I've always gone, you know, a referee that smile and have a chat, all right, sorry, I might have got that wrong, or blah, blah, blah. I think you cut them some slack in. But there you go. Oh, I don't know.
Well, someone's just come in. Richard Mann, if you know him, Craig.
Yes, yes.
He says here, a ring-a-ding-ding-ding, standing at the boozer late last night. Take it easy, Craig.
Ah, bless him. Yeah, no, he's a Billericay, big supporter over there, yeah.
And then I've got Harrison Bond said, yes, Bart.
Oh,
that's good. Yeah, oh, good lad. Right. That's one of the lads that does our social media stuff. Really, really good guy. Just, yeah, he's got bundles of energy. He gets around. He's always involved. Like, love it. So, yeah, cheers, mate.
But I mean, so what's the future then for first of all, for you, Craig, of course, what's the future for Craig? I mean, how long do you see yourself out for? And I mean, is it a case now of you know, seeing something and going for it? And what sort of step level? Is it going to be just getting back in at 4-3?
I think now, I think it'd have to be just basically a club where I think the most important thing at any club is your relationship with the chairman. And, I would go and meet any chairman, and if I think, yeah, it's a club that they've got ambitions, they want to do well, and I think I'm going to get on well with the chairman. That is the most important thing to me, you know, to have that relationship. And then what I've always tried to do is just, and I think it's been my biggest achievement, is every club I've been at that I've unified the supporters, the board, the players, and made it one, you know, one big happy club. Mm. And that's in building relationships all the way through the club. And so if I've got that vibe, I went in there, talked to someone, and I had that vibe about a club, then the level wouldn't necessarily worry me at all. It would be that relationship. Because, you know, and I've had a couple of awful chairmen, and that led me to leaving clubs, and but I've had a lot of very, very good chairmen, and the success has been always been better when you've got a good chairman there.
Mm. And for you, Mark, I mean, what's the future for you and Marlo?
Just try, you know, making sure that we continue to improve this season. Like I said, I think if we do that, then I believe that we'll get enough points to stay up. And that's it. That's the immediate future. And then, you know, continuing to kind of build on those foundations that we started to put in with regards to the infrastructure of the club. There's, you know, lots of sort of stuff going on in the background in terms of us, you know, potentially with our ground and stuff as well. So, but the immediate thing for me is, you know, week on week, continue to improve. And like I said, get enough points to stay in the league and establish ourselves at the level, really. So That's as far ahead as I'm thinking.
Well, listen, guys, it's been fantastic. Time's run away for us. I could talk to you two guys all night long, in all fairness. We could keep going all night long, but I know you're busy, guys. But a massive thank you to Mark. Massive thank you, of course, to Craig as well. We'll be
Fair
back.
Enough.
We'll be back next week with the Repos non-league show. But for me, for Mark, and from Craig, good night.
Good luck, Mark. Cheers, Dave.